A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football, presented by Dr. Pepper and Hooters. Your home to watch all the college game day action with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
A good Thanksgiving Friday to you. Hello there. How's it going? Heath Klein in for the King, Chuck Oliver, today. But the college football content, well, that is always here for you on the Chuck Oliver Show. And, man, what a day. I mean, look, if Chuck's going to take a day for family time, I get it. But, man, he left us some good material to work with while he's away. Last night, the Egg Bowl got us started off on a particularly strong rivalry week. Hey, look, all these games matter to people locally. But not always can you find a lot of angles to work with if you are not invested in the game on that local level. But this time, I mean, look around. There's not a single game with SEC teams in rivalry week that doesn't have something of value attached. I mean, and the great part is, too, that's just going in. Who knows what's going to happen once they actually play the game? Because last night, for example, you had Mike Leach get his first win in the Egg Bowl. Not just that, but this is a guy, if you look at his track record back to the Apple Cup at Washington, he has not been good in these kind of games. Texas Tech doesn't really have a rival that's that same level as a Washington-Washington State or a Mississippi-Mississippi State. So I don't know if you can judge him on anything from Texas Tech. But in the Apple Cup, he was bad, really bad. Lost it on a consistent basis. And he lost the first two times out in this one. So he picks up his first win in the rivalry. And on top of that, you've got everything that is the Lane Kiffin show. All the time, there's going to be something with Lane. You employ Lane to be your coach, and that is part of the deal. You deal with the idea that Lane's going to do something on social media that's going to generate a lot of conversation. It's just part of the experience. And this week, on Monday, what was Lane Kiffin worried about doing on social media? He was worried about pushing back against a report that he was supposedly going to leave for the Auburn job, and he didn't just say that's nonsense. Yeah, that's fair. If you do that, that's completely fair to say, look, I'm not going anywhere. He didn't say that, by the way. He criticized the reporting, but he didn't actually say I'm not going anywhere, which he could have said any time, and maybe he's telling the truth, maybe he's not if he does, but he could have said that. He has not chosen to. So that would have given him a chance to eliminate this kind of report coming out in the first place. But okay, Monday night, local TV guys goes with the claim that Lane is going to resign, in fact, today, and become the Auburn coach. And so Lane not only pushes back at him on social media, he then comes up with a whole other separate post with a press release and everything else, which winds up getting used the exact same font to mock Ole Miss losing last night with Mississippi State's social media team sending that out. But yet Lane earlier in the week worried about what he's going to say on social media and going back and forth with a local TV guy. And then last night, look, the guys doing the TV broadcast, I don't know why they didn't make a bigger deal of this. They didn't seem to pay attention. I got to admit, that Thursday night crew is not my favorite. But when they called timeout, I mean, if you're Lane Kiffin, you have had the entire drive knowing you're down 8 points. You are going for two. I mean, this is not a question. You've known for 20-plus minutes you were going to have to go for two whenever you scored, if you scored. So you've had the entire drive to know whatever your best two-point play is, have it ready. That's what you're doing. It's 24-22. If you score, great. Now you're in a tie game. If you don't, you still have a chance. First, there's the onside kick. And then after that, even if you don't get the onside kick, you have all three of your timeouts. So you can use all three of your timeouts to keep Mississippi State from just kneeling down, running out the clock. You might get the ball back somewhere in the neighborhood with the time of about a minute to go. Now, a minute to go, probably deep in your territory. Not ideal, but it still beats never getting the ball back, which is what you're looking at if you don't have those three timeouts. And yet Kiffin sends his guys out there, looks at the situation, timeout. Oy. You better be right. You better have the right play. But all right, the most important thing is getting the two. So if you were already convinced what you saw, you weren't going to get the two, okay, understandable. Not ideal, but understandable. Then he calls a second timeout. Once he calls the second timeout, that's it. You have now bet the entire game on that two-point play. Because now, mathematically, you are not going to be able to get the ball back if you don't get the onside kick. And they didn't get the two, and they didn't get the onside kick, and the game was over. To call two timeouts in that situation, to have called a play that you did not believe in, or to have your guys not prepared well enough to be lined up correctly, whatever your issues were, that is absolute malpractice. And the guys on the TV network didn't even seem to notice, which it's like, hello, pay attention here, boys. But regardless, just a disastrous performance there by Lane Kiffin in that two-point situation that finishes off the win for Mississippi State. And that's just one game. Who knows what kind of drama storylines we're going to get before the end of the weekend with some of these things going on today. Just here on a Friday, you've got Missouri today trying to get bowl eligible against Arkansas. Arkansas got there last week. They could still clinch a winning season today. But for Missouri, this is important. You don't want to be the only team in the SEC East, potentially, that is not getting any extra practice time. It's not getting work with your young players. You can't be that team or only be you and Vandy. You can't do it. They got to win today. They just gave their coach a $1 million raise. They got to win today. This is supposed to be a rivalry game. You got to look like it's a rivalry game. You got to hit them with your best stuff, and you got to win today. Billy Napier, Florida State on a Friday night. Man, that is weird. I know it's FSU's call to do it. They've got the right because it's at home. This feels really weird. I don't know that I'm a big fan of this. But regardless, that's the deal. Friday night, FSU and Florida. If you're Billy Napier, your season started with a real high note with that Utah win. Is your season going to close out losing to Vanderbilt and then losing in Tallahassee? Because if so, man, that's not a great sign at all. Remember, if you followed Urban Meyer at Florida, Urban Meyer had his ups and downs his first year, kind of like a Napier's had this year. Had some good moments, had some cringe moments. But if you remember, at the end of 2005, Urban Meyer in Florida beat FSU. And that game was at home. That's not a luxury Napier gets this year. But they beat FSU and Bobby Bowden at home, rode that momentum into the bowl game. A lot of positive vibes for recruiting and for other things at the end of the year. And, of course, a year later, they're the national champions. I'm certainly not saying Billy Napier should be expected to do that, but there's some history here. There's an example of how closing the year strong can make a big difference. 2 weeks ago, Florida posted what was probably their most comprehensive victory of the year in beating South Carolina and proceeded to give it right back with a disaster in Nashville. So what is going to be the closing image of the regular season for Billy Napier? Losing in Tallahassee? If so, man, batten down the hatches. Those folks are not going to be patient, but for so long down there. And 6-6, year one with a loss in Tallahassee is not going to fly very well at all. And that's just today. I mean, think about it. Tomorrow, you've got interim coaches at Auburn and Georgia Tech that are trying to not only maybe get the job, but I mean, think about it, even if they don't get it, for a Cadillac Williams or Brent Key, what it would win a win in a Georgia Tech game with Georgia or an Auburn win over Nick Saban in Alabama under these circumstances. Imagine what that would mean for those guys. You say, come on, interim coaches. I can give you an example. Dabo Swinney, 2008, Dabo and Clemson beat South Carolina. If Dabo doesn't win that game, Dabo is probably not the head coach. Maybe he's never a head coach. Who knows what Dabo's doing these days? But Dabo is probably not the head coach of Clemson if they don't beat South Carolina in 2008. And they didn't just beat them. They beat him handily. Broke out a trick play, brought a guy off the sideline play for the special teams for a fake field goal thing. Did a bunch of fancy stuff, and they won that game back in 2008. And that was a giant difference maker for Dabo Swinney and his future. Those interim guys today, who knows? Can Vanderbilt get bowl eligible? I know that sounds like crazy talk, but look, the facts are they've won a couple in a row. If Vanderbilt could beat Tennessee in that rivalry game, can you imagine the role reversal there? And remember, for the Vols, first game without Hendon Hooker. This is going to be your future anyway, but you certainly never wanted to get a look at what it was going to be like this way. It's just, it's awful for Hooker and for Tennessee that he didn't get to finish out this year, but now you've got to adapt quickly and be ready to go. Should Tennessee handle Vandy? Of course they should. But that's part of what makes rivalry weeks so fun, is that you never quite know for sure what's going to happen. So again, and those are just only SEC teams we've talked about. We haven't even talked about all of them. This is a fantastic weekend. Whoever your team is, whatever you're into, if you're one of the Mississippi folks who listen to us, you've already gotten your game played. Man, doesn't matter. Sit back, relax, enjoy this, savor it, take it in. Because we're about to lose football here after a couple more weeks, unfortunately. But the table is set for some really awesome stuff this weekend. We will get into one of those games coming up, Georgia and Georgia Tech. The Dogs, of course, look like they're on track smoothly for a trip to the playoff, but there is still plenty to take care of between here and there. We'll get some perspective on that straight ahead. You're listening to the Chuck Oliver Show.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday of Thanksgiving weekend. Heath Klein in for Chuck today, talking all about the big games going on, one of which, of course, involves the Dogs. Georgia taking on Georgia Tech, a rivalry game that, okay, admittedly, the last few have not had as much drama attached. One program is pretty far ahead of the other, but again, Brent Key's got his guys playing better, and for the Dogs, you got to make sure you don't look past this with SEC title game and everything else that's on the line for you down the future. You can't lose track of this one. Anthony Dasher, of course, could be heavily interested in this one from UGASports.com. You can see him on Twitter. AnthonyDasher1 is the handle there. Anthony, thanks for making some time for us today. How you doing, man?
Hey, my pleasure. Doing great.
Well, what do you think when you look at this team? I mean, look, last year I had somebody tell me that they honestly believed that the Dogs might take it a little easy on the Jackets because Kirby didn't want to run the risk of maybe them deciding to fire Collins a year early. That he didn't want that happening. He was real comfortable with Jeff Collins being the guy in charge on the flats. At minimum, that vibe has changed a little bit. What do you make of this version of the Jackets and how the Dogs match up with them?
Well, my first just take on Georgia Tech is how much better they're playing since Brent Key took over. I mean, have you really seen this his program, and I call it his program because I think it is right now, just really kind of play into his, showing some energy, showing some passion, which is the way, Brent Key played when he was an offensive lineman, there back in the day, played the same time as Coach Bart did. And I think, Jacket fans should be, I think, pretty pleased with the way they played. Beat a ranked Pittsburgh team, beat North Carolina last week. And, they're playing better than they played in a couple of years.
Having said that, the gap still appears pretty substantial. What if anything stands out about them? If there's anything they could do to make this a 60-minute affair for the Dogs, how's that happen?
Well, they've got to create some turnover, number one, which Georgia has turned the ball over a time or two, going over the last three games. But otherwise, they're going to have to find some offense, and that's going to be very difficult against the Georgia defense, which has really honestly kind of surprised me a little bit this year. I thought they'd be good, but I didn't think they'd be quite as good statistically anyway as they've proven to be thus far. So, I mean, that's the bottom line. They get turnovers and find some offense, which so far nobody really has been able to do against the Bulldogs so far this year.
Is there any concern after a game like Kentucky where you never felt like the Dogs were in meaningful trouble, but at the same time, yeah, you never were able to quite put the game away and just get a couple in the end zone and say, okay, we're done here. Any concerns at all coming out of that?
I think with red zone offense, I think there is. I mean, you never want to settle for field goals, which is what Georgia had to do in that game. Settle for, you know, in the red zone four times. Had to kick three field goals another time. They were turned away on fourth down, which would have made the score 23-0. You probably wouldn't even have a conversation about those issues right now. But that is something that I think that Georgia does need to clean up. I mean, you can get away with it, you know, probably like they did at Kentucky, but, you know, here on down the road, LSU next week in Atlanta, and, of course, the playoffs after that, they've got to get a lot more efficient with red zone than they have been the past few weeks.
Anthony Dasher with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show from UGASports.com, looking at the Dogs, not just this Georgia Tech matchup, but as Anthony alluded to, there's a lot ahead here for them. Anthony, one guy I'm curious about, A.D. Mitchell. That injury, when it happened, you knew he was going to be out for a while, but it's been kind of an ongoing question of when he'd be back. One, just what's the latest? And then two, how much would it help them to add a guy like that into the conversation again after so long away, what he could bring to maybe turbocharge that offense a little bit?
Well, to answer your last question, would bring a lot. I mean, the receiving corps, I think, has done a very good job in his absence. But, again, you're talking about a guy 6'3", 210 pounds that can get separation. And that's really, I won't say that's an issue for Georgia because they have been able to hit some deep passes. But he's just that kind of a talent. I mean, you put him on the field, the other team's going to be paying attention to him. And maybe some good news for Georgia this week. We know Kirby Smart actually conceded. AD is finally starting to get some reps with the receivers. He'd been working off to the side prior to this, trying to get that high ankle sprain in shape. And, you know, I was able to confirm yesterday that, yes, he has been able to practice with the team all week long. Now, does that mean he'll play this week? No, we'll see. It's kind of a situation similar to George Pickens last year after his ACL injury coming back late. He finally got to play in the SEC championship game against Alabama. And I'm just not sure he's going to play tomorrow. I mean, perfect world, ideally, yes, he would. You'll get some reps, shake off some of that rust, and be ready to go for the LSU contest. But at least it's good news for Georgia that he's out there because since the Auburn game, he's not even been a factor as far as having a chance to get in the game.
Yeah, honestly, I wonder whether you wouldn't rather just, even if it is, just a few reps, just to break the seal, see what he's got. I mean, you don't want to run the risk of re-aggravating. I get it, but... But at the same time, it feels like you wouldn't want his first snaps to be coming in the SEC championship game if you could possibly avoid it.
No doubt. You wouldn't want him going in cold, so to speak. I mean, you want him to have get 4, 5, 6 reps, something like that. It doesn't have to be that meaningful. Just let him, again, just like you said, just shake the rust off. Get a chance to get back in the game, kind of get the juices flowing a little bit. But we'll see. It's just all going to depend on that ankle field, and that's just been an issue. I mean, he re-aggravated in that Auburn game, got 6 reps in that one. And just had a hard time coming back.
Anthony, we're at a point now where the Heisman Trophy talk, I hate it that we start talking about the Heisman in July. I think it's pretty dumb, frankly, but we do. And so having said that, we've gotten as late in the year as I can remember where there is not a clear consensus guy. You know, right now it seems like maybe the Trojans quarterback has sort of moved to the head of the line, but you know, lose one game and he could fall back. There are still people who believe that Stetson Bennett has a chance in this thing. That if the Dogs are undefeated, and here he is on his way to the playoff with an undefeated team and a championship from last year, that maybe that whole best player, best team thing happens or something like that. In your mind, is there a legit case for Stetson Bennett as best football player in the country?
I just think it's tough. I mean, I'm not saying that Stetson doesn't deserve to be in New York City. I definitely think he does. You know, does that. But, again, he's thrown for 3,011 yards this year, but he has only thrown for 14 touchdowns and scored 7 on the ground. You have a lot of guys with a lot better stats than that. But you know, like I said, it's kind of a funny year for the Heisman Trophy this year because nobody's really kind of went out and grabbed it by the throat and say, hey, this is going to be my award this season. So, you know, with a strong game, you know, against Georgia Tech, maybe a great effort against LSU, lead Georgia, you know, to a possible SEC title. Maybe that will give him some more looks. But right now, I just think it's going to be a little bit tough for him.
Yeah, to me, what it goes back to is, as impressive as he's been, if we're supposed to take the award for what it is, which it's supposed to be best player, not best offensive player on a championship-level team, yeah, in the end, it's hard for me to look at this team and say he's better than, say, Jalen Carter. He's better than Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
And if I can't confidently say for sure he's the best player on his own team, then it's just hard for me to say he's the best player in the country.
No question. I mean, I agree with you on that. I mean, Georgia has so many complimentary players on this team, and that's why, you know, they're sitting in the position they are right now. I mean, you mentioned Jalen Carter. I mean, gosh, since he's come back, it's just the difference he's made with that defensive front. I mean, just wreaking havoc and making everybody else's job a lot easier than Brock Bowers. I mean, again, just talking one of the arguably the best tight end in the country, put him with Darnell Washington, and that's quite the combination for other teams to have to try to, you know, try to stop. So, I mean, and there are other guys besides that, too, that are very good players on this Bulldog team. So, yes, and as good as he's been, and I think as good as a leader as he is, yeah, it's just going to be tough to win the Heisman Trophy, I think.
Last minute here with Anthony Dasher from UGASports.com. Anthony, one of the things about a team like Georgia, because they are so deep, sometimes guys kind of emerge as the year goes on. Is there one kid that you've noticed maybe in the last 2 to 3 weeks that isn't that kind of household name yet, that by the end of the SEC title game, people who don't follow the Dogs day in, day out are going to know that name?
Well, the guy on defense, he's really kind of been there all year, but I think folks are just now beginning to appreciate him a little bit more as, you know, middle linebacker Jamon Dumas-Johnson. Now, he's been, he was the guy who's had replacing the Kobe Dean, and a lot of people thought that was going to be pretty much impossible from last year. If you look at the numbers and look at what Jamon does just from a leadership standpoint, he's been able to come in and I think do a very good job. So you've got him. You look at the job that Malachi Starks has done as a true freshman at free safety. Christopher Smith. I mean, there's a lot of guys who had better years. Maybe some people maybe expected, but if I was to pick one, probably Jamon Dumas-Johnson, because of the position he plays and the leadership role he has.
Well, Anthony, enjoy the game, man. We appreciate you making some time, and always enjoy having you with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thank you very much.
There you go, Anthony Dasher from UGASports.com. Again, the Dogs and the Jackets coming up tomorrow. And look, if Brent Key and his guys pull the upset, you should give him the job right there on the field. I don't think that it's terribly likely they can do that, but the difference in the level of performance for that team is just so night and day. I mean, it's extraordinary how much better they have been since he took over. And just a few basic things, too. Things like special teams, just being able to not have just things that blow up a game for you. I mean, forget about being great. If you just stop shooting yourself in your foot, that alone can help you really make a jump forward as a team. And Key and company have really cleaned that up. And even when you lose your starting quarterback, you've still been able to perform at a pretty high level these last few weeks. So don't think they can make a bowl game, but a much more competitive affair than we thought it was going to be. All right, we continue here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Again, we will have a look at what's going on over on the West Coast coming up, an important game. We just mentioned that Heisman Trophy. What exactly is it that they can do to try and move towards the playoff? We will have that for you coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on a Friday of Thanksgiving weekend. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. And, of course, plenty of games to keep an eye on all around the country. Huge implications for things like the playoff, the Heisman, conference championships. And we go outside the South for this one, but it's an important one. It is Southern Cal and Notre Dame. They're getting together. And in the case of the Trojans, right now their path to the playoffs looking pretty good if they can just get through this end part of the schedule. Chris Trevino joins us right now. He covers them for 24/7 Sports and the Peristyle. And he makes time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Chris, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you making the time. This has been one of the programs everybody around the country has been interested in all year because of the unique set of circumstances here. You know, Lincoln Riley, first of all, just taking that job blew people's minds. Then the fact he's able to bring guys in with him like his quarterback, Caleb Williams, and a guy like Jordan Addison comes over after winning the Biletnikoff. You know the deal, Chris. For a lot of people, this is the black hat program in college football right now. People want this program not to succeed doing it that way. I'm curious, as a guy who covers them on a day-to-day basis, if that's the view from here, do they feel that? Do they care about that?
Not necessarily. I think early on, you know, when everyone started to first arrive out of the transfer portal in the spring and in the summer, that was definitely a topic of discussion, just how this was all going to work and how this was all going to look. And, you know, the word mercenary was thrown around to these guys a lot, but a lot of them just kind of shrugged it off. And I think they were more focused on the inward stuff, you know, not all the noise from the outside of national radio and national media and talking heads and all that, you know, calling them mercenaries and, you know, poo-pooing how this team was built through the transfer portal. And a lot of them just wanted to focus on finding that chemistry within them in that locker room, because that was the most important thing for the season to work, you know, bringing in all these guys. If they didn't get along together in that locker room, this team would not be 10-1. You know, this team would not be on the verge of doing something, you know, historic, going from 4 wins to a playoff team. So that was kind of their main focus. And they, for the most part, have not really listened to that noise of, you know, people talking about how this team was built.
Well, now they get a crack at Notre Dame, and it's a rivalry game, of course, as so many of them are this week. But it's also a game that if they win, I mean, they're pretty much on track to have a great shot at the playoff as long as LSU doesn't knock off Georgia, get themselves into the mix. You look at the way the committee's setting things up. TCU, obviously, we don't know if they're going to finish it out. At minimum, if you're a Trojan fan, you feel pretty good. If they win two more, they're probably in this thing. Not a lock, but probably, based on what else needs to happen. How are they handling that?
Well, I think most recently, a lot of USC fans have been upset about the quote-unquote SEC bias of the committee, and they've been complaining about how a two-loss LSU team is still ranked ahead of them in the CFP rankings. But what my message has been is just, don't worry about the rankings this week. You know, it does not matter this week, because if USC does win their next two games, you know, beat a ranked Notre Dame team, beat a ranked conference opponent in the Pac-12 championship, for the most part, you have a amazing shot of getting in. Don't worry about what the rankings are this week, you know, because that doesn't matter. That's something that Lincoln Riley has preached all season with his team, and they frankly do not care about what the rankings say, because if they take care of business, I think they're going to be okay. So I think that has been the important message for USC fans, is trying to keep all of this in context of not really worrying about where LSU ranked, or not really worrying about where Tennessee or Oregon or any of that stuff. Because remember, this team was 4 wins last year, and the fact that they're now in a position to be complaining about LSU being ranked ahead of them at number 5 in the CFP rankings is crazy. So I think they just need to take a little bit of context with their ranking this year. And but for the most part, they are very excited about the possibility. A lot of fans are a little bit wary of, are we ready for the college football playoff, and should we just be happy with going to a Rose Bowl? So there is some conflicting ideologies out there with the fan base, but for the most part, very excited about what this 10-1 team has accomplished.
Talking some Trojan football with Chris Trevino here on the Chuck Oliver Show. And yeah, it's funny you say that, because looking at it, Chris, I mean, honestly, look, I'm a Colorado fan, full disclosure, so I know all too well how easy it is to kick the crap out of Colorado. But other than that, I mean, you look at their last month, you lose a one-point game, dramatic, but you lose a one-point game. Yeah, relatively close game with Arizona, relatively close game with Cal, three-point game last week. They're winning, but at the same time, it's not like they've been able to just hit that extra gear and start dominating people. Are they ready for that level? Are they ready to be one of the very best teams in the country when they're still having to play this many games that are, other than Colorado, pretty close affairs?
Yeah, I keep kind of going back and forth on this, and this was something we talked about in the preseason going into this year, like, hey, can USC make the college football playoff? And my stance was, absolutely, they can, based on the schedule and the offensive talent that they have, and if some things fall in the right place, and that's what's happening right now. But are they actually ready to play a Georgia at a 1-4 matchup or something like that, or an Ohio State. You know, those programs have been stocking talent for years and years and years, and that's a place USC is not at yet. You know, there are still a ton of holes on this team, mainly defensively, but also depth-wise on the offensive side of the ball. So they don't have that blue blood depth that other teams have built through recruiting over the last decade. You know, Lincoln Riley has to get the team to that point. That's why he hit the portal so hard. So can USC's offensive line handle Georgia's deep front for four quarters? I don't think so. Can USC's defense, which has been criticized heavily and deservedly so for a lot of things, but they are scrappy, but can they handle a Georgia offense for four quarters? That's a tall task, and I don't really think they're ready to be on that big stage, but man, if they get there, it would be quite a story and a historic turnaround in year one for Riley. But I will say, you know, they do have a high-powered offense, and a lot of things could happen when you have a really good offense and a potential Heisman winner in Caleb Williams. So I wouldn't say there would be an impossibility of them winning a game at that stage, but man, if you have a Heisman winner quarterback, you could do a lot of things and maybe do some damage. So I would just let the ball roll out there and let them play the game. But, yeah, they have some very big holes that would be very much exposed in that CFP kind of playoff stage.
Notre Dame, the opponent this week, you look at the Irish, and if you catch them at their worst when they're losing to Marshall or losing to Stanford, you say, well, this is just going to be a wipe-your-feet-on-them kind of game. On the other hand, they've played a lot better ball the last few weeks. But my question, and I'm sure it is yours too, would be, can they keep up with the Trojans? If this is a game where the Trojan offense is working, it sure doesn't feel like Notre Dame has an offense to do that. So how do they make up that gap if they don't appear to have that level of offense?
Yeah, this is something I've been kind of thinking about this week. And I kind of think back to the Cal game that USC played in, and Cal's offense was not a great offense. They have a good running back. They don't have that many weapons, and it kind of reminds me of Notre Dame's offense and, you know, having a non-mobile quarterback. But USC's defense made them look like Ohio State. They were just putting up points left and right and giving up big drives. So that might be the key for them, is just catching USC's defense on kind of an off game. That defense kind of got lulled to sleep a little bit, and then boom, 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 Cal was driving down the field, and at one point, they needed an onside kick to kind of seal this onside kick recovery to seal this one. So, if Notre Dame can kind of get the running game going with some big plays, kind of lull them a little bit in the run game, and maybe take some shots with their big tight end. You know, USC has struggled severely this year when it comes to big tight ends. You know, just ask Dalton Kincaid at Utah, who just went bananas on them in that upset and that win. So they have some pieces that do not fit USC's defensive matchups in terms of a strong running game. USC's run defense has been porous this year. And then a big tight end, which just have given USC linebackers and those smaller cornerbacks issues all season. So they have some pieces to make it a game in this one. But if USC's offense gets a big enough lead, I don't know how they're going to be able to keep up that pace. As you said, USC's defense loves it when their offense has that lead and they can just be opportunistic and take some turnovers. So it's going to take ball security as well.
Yeah, it's like you read my mind about the tight end, because I was going to ask. Mayer, on paper, that seems like by far Notre Dame's best matchup to try and exploit here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that's been harped on this week in practice, that you have to stop 87. You know, if 87 gets going, this is going to be a shootout, because what the issue was with Dalton is they were just giving him too much free reign. You know, they weren't taking him down. They did a horrible job of tackling him. Dalton Kincaid is big, but Michael Mayer is bigger than Dalton Kincaid. So if you're going to struggle to take down Mayer, you know, it's going to be a long night for those linebackers. And, you know, they don't have one of their best coverage guys there, and Eric Gentry, he's battling that ankle injury. We don't know if he'll be back. I would say he's questionable, but they need some help in terms of, you know, getting that guy to the ground and just not letting him get the ball in his hands in the first place. They have some kind of smaller nickels, which doesn't really match up with Mayer, but they just need to be able to tackle him. You know, I think they can survive if he gets catches, but the issue was they were just letting him break tackles. As Dalton Kincaid in the Utah game, they were just letting him break tackles, pick up so much extra yardage, and that was what really was killing them. So if they can do a much better job of tackling this week, I think they can be okay. They can escape this one.
Last couple of minutes here on the Chuck Oliver Show with Chris Trevino. Again, looking at the Trojans as they get ready to take on Notre Dame. Caleb Williams, at least this week, has moved to the head of the line in a lot of the Heisman polls. He's kind of been always there, but never really at the forefront of the conversation until now. But with Hooker getting injured, people are still looking, trying to figure out, okay, so who's going to win this thing? What does Caleb Williams do as a quarterback? For people who haven't watched the Trojans enough, especially here in the South, what does he do that makes him special, that makes him different from somebody else who's played for Riley, put up numbers? What are the qualities that make Caleb Williams that guy?
I just go back and look at it, and there's so many things that he does. You know, he's an amazing leader. He's always giving the support on the sideline when things are going bad. He always has this sort of aloof body language that makes him doesn't look engaged, but that's how he kind of processes the game, you know, which can be very highly emotional and stressful on the sideline and in the game. But I go back to, it reminds me sort of like with Kyler and obviously that mobility. He's gotten the nickname this year, Black Magic, for his ability to just absolutely get out of some sticky situations where it looks like a defense has him dead to rights, and he'll just make these moves, get out of that pocket, go down the field, go out of the pocket and kind of readjust in a split second and make these incredible tight window throws. You know, when he got here in the summer, people were talking about, oh, the ball is different out of his hands. He just has a live arm. The ball comes out different, and we've heard that a lot, and you can see it. He'll have at least three passes like this in a game where he'll get out on the run, readjust on the fly, and then just put the ball on the money. And that, I think, is the strongest strength of his. It's just that he can make things out of nothing when everything looks like it's going bad, and then just get the ball in this tight window that you wouldn't expect him to make that. You know, there are not a lot of college quarterbacks. There's maybe two college quarterbacks in the country that can make the throws that he's making, and he's one of them, and that's why USC has been so dangerous on offense. So it's his ability to just make these throws that not a lot of quarterbacks can make. These are throws that quarterbacks on Sunday struggle to make. So that's, I think, what's setting him apart.
Going to be a fun one for sure in the Coliseum on Saturday night. Chris, I appreciate you making time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
There you go. Chris Trevino again. You can check him out on Twitter. Chris N. Trevino is the handle there. Check out his work at 24/7 Sports site covering the Trojans. Coming up, there is a move that got made in the SEC a couple of weeks ago that hadn't even come to light until recently, but it shows two things. It shows a coach willing to actually put his ego aside, and it also shows why other coaches might want to take a look at this and think about how they assemble their staff. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on. Heath flying in for Chuck today. Hey, attention football fans. Dr. Pepper and Hooters are giving you the chance to win tickets to huge college football semifinals game coming up in Atlanta. Stop into your local Hooters today where you can register for your chance to win tickets and hotel to the college football semifinals game in Atlanta, courtesy of Dr. Pepper. While you're there, post a picture of you and your party drinking an ice-cold Dr. Pepper using the hashtag Hootersville for an additional chance to win. It's the ultimate college football semifinals promo, courtesy of Dr. Pepper and Hooters, so stop in for your chance to win today. All right, so Missouri is going to play Arkansas, and when they do, Eli Drinkwitz is not going to be the guy calling the plays. And that's something that didn't get publicly announced, but word came down earlier this week on 3 Sports breaking the story that quietly, right after he'd gotten a contract extension, Eli Drinkwitz handed over the play-calling responsibilities to their quarterbacks coach, Bush Hamden. Now, Bush Hamden had previously been an offensive coordinator at Washington, so this is not just some random guy getting a chance to call plays. And I tend to suspect that part of the reason it wasn't announced publicly is because if you announce it publicly, then you're also sort of saying, in effect, oh, this is the next thing. This is the next big move. I don't know if Bush Hamden is going to be an offensive coordinator for them past this season. I don't know if Eli Drinkwitz was even 100% committed to this idea and was sure it would work. But he evidently did say, you know what, I'm going to put the private action in place to match my public comments. He had said publicly he'd be willing to give up play calling if he thought that that was something that would help Missouri, that he'd be willing to do it. Well, the first part of the season, the Missouri program, 17.4 points a game is what they're averaging leading up to the change. Since then, two games, they've scored 69 points. And even if you say, well, only the SEC game, they scored 24 against the Vols. So if you only include that, they still were 7 points better than what they've been the rest of the season overall. So you look at that and you say, all right. This is somebody who's a head coach who's known for his offense. That's why you hire Eli Drinkwitz. Eli Drinkwitz, when you're Missouri, you're hiring a guy with 1 year of experience as a head coach at App State. You're hiring him based on the idea, this guy knows how to move the football. This guy knows how to put points on the board. He's going to have a fun offense. Kids are going to want to play in it. He's going to be, with his offense, a cornerstone of your identity. And yet here you are right after you give him a contract extension. He's saying, nah, not going to call the plays. I like it. I like it because Drinkwitz had said publicly he'd be willing to do it, but he hadn't actually been willing to do it. And I like it because it shows somebody who says, you know, I can't let my own ego tie me in knots here. I can't say, even though I think I'm a really good offensive mind, I got a lot of confidence in myself when it comes to play calling, I can't say that it's the right thing for my team right now. I'm willing to try something different. I like that. But here's the other part of the coin. If you are South Carolina, for example, last week South Carolina had an amazing offensive day. It's the kind of day that programs may never, ever have. If you think about it, they scored 63 points and only 7 of it really had anything to do with a turnover. 63 points, 9 touchdowns in 10 drives that didn't end with kneeling it down at the end of the half against a top 5 team. So at the moment, I'm sure everybody's saying, well, how could you possibly have an issue with that offense? But the problem is everything before then for South Carolina offensively had been pretty rough. But Shane Beamer does not have anybody else on his staff. He does not have a Bush Hamden. He doesn't have that guy that previously has called plays somewhere on the college level, the pro level, to where if the offense was struggling, he could hand it off to somebody else. In fact, fans in South Carolina have been trying to imagine who that is. Now, you have a bunch of people over there that literally refuse to believe that Marcus Satterfield, the guy who's been the offensive coordinator all year, that he's actually the guy who called the plays in that Tennessee game because it was so much different than everything else. But if you watch the offense, you know it was still the same basic principles. They did some things more aggressively because they realized they were up against a team that was going to score a zillion points. So they did some things different, but they didn't put in a new offense. It wasn't like they suddenly started running T formation or something. It was not that radical a change. And so you look at it, though, earlier in the year, if you were Shane Beamer and you had somebody on your staff with play calling experience, maybe you make that move. Maybe you quietly do it, just like what Eli Drinkwitz did at Missouri. Maybe you quietly hand off the duties to somebody else and you see, does that get us a better result? Does that help the situation? You can always, if you're the head coach, grab the wheel back. Eli Drinkwitz, during this game against Arkansas, if he decides, hey, I don't like what I'm seeing, no one's going to tell him no if he suddenly says, hey, I'm calling the plays again. But giving somebody else a chance to do it, breaking your tendencies, that's smart. If you have faith in the guy, you know, do it just to do it. But if you got a guy that you say, you know what, I think this guy understands me, but he's not me, and he's going to break our tendencies. He's going to make us a little tougher to defend just because he's going to do some things differently than I would. That's the kind of move that a confident head coach, even a confident head coach with an offensive background, should be willing to make. And so kudos to Eli Drinkwitz for having the guts to do it. And to me, the lesson is for every staff from here on out, you should try to make sure at this point in college football, you got at least one guy there that's done it. Doesn't have to be your quarterback's coach. It could be any position coach. But just have a guy available that if you wanted to shake it up a little bit, could be that guy that you try. And again, it doesn't mean that you have to commit to him as your long-term offensive coordinator. I'm certainly not saying that Missouri is doing that, and it's impossible for me to imagine that Missouri won't keep running Drinkwitz's stuff long term, regardless of whether it's Bush Hamden calling it, Drinkwitz calling it, or somebody else he brings in to call it. It's always going to be Eli Drinkwitz's offense, just like if you're Kirby Smart, it's always going to be at the core your defense, no matter who it is that's officially got the title for the Dogs. It's going to be your defense. It's always going to be that way with Drinkwitz, and it should be. That's what his stock and trade is. But more and more, I think you're seeing the pressures these guys are under, the difficulties of these jobs as head coaches, and the challenges that go with it. You need to be a true head coach, be able to represent all of your team's interests and work with all your team. The days of head coach play callers, I think, are going to be progressively dwindling. So if you're that guy who wants to be it, like, say, a Jimbo Fisher, man, wouldn't it be helpful if you had somebody you trusted you could hand it off to? Could have benefited him a whole bunch. We will check the bowl situation coming up. Keep it right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.